Joining us on the line, Ian Bessarabi, it's the future of work. Ian, a very good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well, thanks. And you, Howard?
I'm good, thanks. I just want to know your thoughts. You've obviously been following the schools returning quite closely. You sent me a document from King David Schools, which I have to say is absolutely superb. One of the most amazing documents that I have seen around COVID and school preparation. Following sort of 24 hours of Australian schools going back, there is there's an outbreak, or not an outbreak, but a kid at Moriah College being tested positive. The school closed, as I say, one day in, and will be opening in a week. What's your thoughts around this?
So Howard, I think this just reiterates how uncertain the times we are living in, and as you said, that comprehensive document that came out and literally spelt out every step of the measures that are going to be put in place and all the contingencies, and it was very reassuring. I must be honest, it made me feel very comfortable, but also at the same time, I also know that we are all human and we can't predict and we can't prevent every eventuality, and I think what you've just alluded to is testament to that. So I think if we turn our focus to work, the work environment, come the 1st of June, we're probably going to experience very similar situations where two scenarios are going to play out. The first one is, as we go down to level 3, we're going to start to see this emergence of the so-called blended world of work. And the blended world of work is effectively where you're going to have individuals that will be going back to work come the 1st of June. And then you will have other individuals who will not be going back to work. One, because through circumstance, through the fact that they are prevented under level 3 from returning back to work. And I'm talking about restaurants and hairdressers, just to name a few. But then there's also going to be individuals, and this is where it links back to schools, is there's going to be a second where people are going to make an individual choice, where as individuals we decide, for whatever reason, maybe it's because we're immune compromised, maybe there's an age factor, or just personal reasons that we don't want to return to work. And I think that is the same, and I must say that the school has also been very open and has asked parents directly, will you be sending your kids back to school when they open? And the reason why I raise this, Howard, is because it's going to create a very interesting work dynamic, one that we are going to have to adapt to our ways of working and the way that we engage with our colleagues. Because if you think about it, Howard, not too long ago, probably just over 10 to 12 weeks ago, if somebody didn't show up at the office.
And in fact, I was fascinated by the point you're saying a couple of months ago, if somebody didn't show up at work, dot, dot, dot.
And there was this immediate, our tendency was to judge and to like kind of draw our own conclusions and say, well, oh, there's Ian slacking off again. He's just not arriving at work, or geez, Ian's been off work a few days, et cetera, et cetera. And I even remember, you know, a lot of my time in being a proponent of flexible working and remote working, I got into a lot of strong debates about allowing people to work from home and have flexible time. Yet now we're in a situation where for genuine reasons, and I think we need to really change our mindset, that we have to accept that people have this choice. And if people don't feel comfortable to A, send their kids to school or to go back to the places of work, both schools and businesses are going to accept that probably for the foreseeable future and maybe for the future in general, that a lot of people will choose that. And the question now is, how do we respect one another, or how do we engage with each other by not being judgmental and just respecting people for their own, what we call moral autonomy? Is that I'm taking a stand and I'm saying, because I believe that by going into the workplace, I'm putting myself and my family at risk. I should not be treated differently. And it's interesting because, if you think about it, and I'm guilty of this, as I think many people are, is the majority of the relationships that we've had at our workplaces, and I do use the word had because it is past tense, were transactional. And when I say transactional, we basically reached out to someone to ask for a report, or we just said hello and immediately jumped into the purpose of our call because we were there to do our work. We were there to do our jobs. And at that point, we kind of knew as little about our coworkers as they knew about you. So we kind of knew everybody on a very, very like, it was on a very like vague basis or very, it wasn't like a deep or meaningful relationship. We're just being courteous. But times have changed and I think we need to engage with our coworkers in a very different way.
Yeah, and everybody's circumstances are so different. Nati, you were saying?
But around that, in terms of getting to know your colleagues or the people under you, a lot of people are concerned that maybe their managers will use, you know, that information to victimize them. For example,
is that a real concern?
It is a real concern. Yeah. I have a friend that has been, you know, she's been suffering from, you know, depression and anxiety. And she was even afraid to kind of disclose that, to ask for time off because, you know, and to let the manager know what is going on. Because she's scared of being victimized. So how does that, how do you get around that?
Interesting, because it does raise it actually raises the level of expectation of behavior of all of us, which is so interesting. Yeah. I actually like that because all of a sudden the person might have to disclose certain things because of the situation that they're in.
Mm.
And that I believe that information, ultimately, whereas the wrong person might use it to victimize them, the right person will actually use it to empower them and guide them and understand them. Because so often in a managerial or in a more senior position, it's not always easy to hear or to understand the, in inverted commas, excuses that people might have for something. You wanted to say?
I was just going to say, I hear exactly what Zanati's saying, and I've experienced that with a lot of people I've engaged with. Have said to me, but I have to go back to work, even though I feel like I'm at risk. And I'm saying, is your life and the family, your family around you, all the stuff that you've been doing for the last few weeks, is it all in vain now? Because now you're compromising your own moral judgment. And that's why, It's very difficult for individuals, but it's equally a great opportunity for us to stand up for what we morally believe in terms of our values. And I think instead of being victimized, it's time now to stand up and just be outspoken and say to a manager, say, listen, this is how I am feeling. It's not like I don't want to do the work, and I take it back, and I know I get lambasted by a lot of people by saying like work from home and remote working is not the future and it's not forever. I disagree with that. I think what we've proved is that we are capable of doing things we never thought we could be doing, and that's working from home or working remotely or working collectively as a team. Yes, we probably do need to put in etiquette. We need to put in rules and, well, not rules, but just like, you can call them rules of engagement. Some companies call them that. But I think that you need to be aware, I think, on both sides. So I think as the individual who's feeling like they are, in Zanati's case, the friend that she was mentioning, you need to acknowledge that and you need to disclose it. And as I say, how you disclose it is also depending on the relationship you have with your manager or your HR team, etc. But I think you have to stand up and be prepared to disclose that, but also stand by your moral values. And equally on the side of managers, there needs to be a mutual respect that these people are coming from a real place. It's not because they want to slack off or because they want to take advantage of the system. And I think it's going to be a new relationship dynamic in organizations and companies that is going to be equally challenging but exciting at the same time, because it opens up a new dynamic for reciprocity and working as teams in different ways, because we can do things that we never thought we could do before. So people who struggle to say, well, what can I do for Howard as an example? How can I do something without expecting something in return? Those are things we're going to have to learn. And that's what I always say, is that you've got to learn to give before asking. You know what I mean? So before you ask for something, try and give something. And I think each and every one of us have got a lot to learn over the last 10 weeks or so since we went into this state of disaster and lockdown. And don't lose that by just rushing out now on the 1st of June and going back to old ways.
Chatting to Ian Basarabi, the future of work. Ian, during the song, we were just chatting, and I thought it was quite an interesting comment you made, is how Zoom calls have actually invited us into other people's homes, and that shows a very different dimension.
Absolutely, Howard, and I think, as I said a little bit earlier, that times have changed, and the way we engage with workers. You know, we had a very one-dimensional view of our colleagues when we used to engage with them in the office, but now we actually have been invited into their homes, and I think what's been fascinating for me, and it's something that I personally experienced, is we're sitting on a call one day, and some people love the virtual backgrounds that you can use, and you can kind of like create your own privacy, but some people just, you can see their home. So you get to see things on their walls, and you get to see dogs walking past or kids walking past. And often people get fascinated by what they see. But I think what a lot of people forget about is that you have to be careful that you're sometimes on the screen. So you're visible to the person on the other side, and you have to match your words to your body language or your reactions. And it was so funny, because the one person on the call spotted something on the wall, and they asked in a very curious tone, what is that? But their face was telling a totally different, giving a totally different message.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Yes.
And for me, that's what I was alluding to a little bit. That's a bit of a humorous way. Unfortunately, it was amongst good colleagues, so it went down in a good way and all of that. But I think the message that comes out of that is to be authentic in your discussions with your colleagues. So if you are asking somebody, how are you feeling today? It's not just a courtesy because it's the first call you've had in the morning with the person. It's, how are you feeling this morning? And listen to what the person says and acknowledge what the person says, and maybe chat about it for 10 minutes. And if you're checking in the morning, and I've actually started to push with a lot of people saying, have a check-in in the morning and a check-out in the evening or at the end of the day, almost round off your day so you know how people are feeling. But the point being is that if you're asking somebody, be authentic and genuine in what you want to hear back from them, and take on what they're saying, is because not only will you be coming across as being genuine, empathetic, understanding the person, making them feel like they're important, but you'll also be able to pick up things which are very important when you're not in a physical office. There's so much stuff, and Howard, you're the body language expert. I'm not.
But it's a bit of a redundant profession at the moment. I'm going the way of the post office.
Well, that's what I'm going to say, Howard. We may put you in a museum one day. You know, I'm just...
There I was, thinking I was cutting edge. Wham, bam. Wow.
Bam, yeah. But that's the thing. We have to draw on new skills now. We have to evolve, and we have to pick up on things. So sometimes in our conversations, and it's very tough because we're not used to, you know, you've got to dig deep to draw on some of your skills to actually sit there and say, well, I actually phoned Howard just for a 5-minute chat just to get an approval on a project, or on an idea or something like that. And that 5 minutes may have to stretch to 10 minutes or perhaps be 15 minutes just to connect with that person and find out what they need, or offer them something just to make them feel that they're still part of the team. And I think I'm not saying this is one-sided and we should now just roll out red carpets and be give people different standards for people that are working from home, and that I think it cuts both ways, is that the people working from home that have elected to work from home or at home through circumstances need to also realize that if they need something, don't sit and wait for an invitation. If you're feeling crap and you're sitting in the corner of your home, don't wait for someone to phone and say, are you okay? You've got to reach out. So I think communication and the way we communicate with all of our colleagues and management, to go back to Zanati's point earlier, to have far more open and honest discussions in the way we engage with our colleagues. And I think it's healthy. I believe that it won't be easy initially, but eventually it will be far healthier and more productive in the long term.
I feel like we've kind of remained distant from our colleagues and managers on a personal level, you know, hiding under the concept of professionalism. Has that evolved? And how are the lines?
A great question.
Are the lines not going to be blurred?
I think it's an interesting question, Howard, and I think there's always with some of these things two different views on it, because the one is they always say in some cases don't blur your business relationships with your personal relationships, because it can create conflicts of interest, it can create other issues. However, having said that, I do believe that it has shifted. And I think the important shift that it has had, and I'm not sure if this is for everyone, but for me, in my engagement, is we've seen a much more human side. We've started to see people differently. Well, I certainly have, and people that I've spoken to have seen people differently, and they've started to see a more human side. And I think for colleagues, it's a little bit easier because they see themselves on the same level. But I think to the point Zanati was alluding to, if I'm correct, is on the more hierarchical side between managers and their team members or team leaders and their team members, it's getting there. It's a process. It's getting there. And you know where I've seen it specifically, Howard, is when a team member or a manager gets onto a call and sees a mom that you would see as your person working in the office, and now you're seeing them in a very different role. And that's why I say you see a very different perspective, and you see a very different view, because you're now looking at the mom in the home who's the wife, who's the mom, who's playing a different role to what you see in the office, yet they're still showing up and delivering in the workspace. And I think it's commanding a different form of respect and building a different relationship. So I don't think we're there yet, Zanati, and I think we've got a long way to go, but it's a great opportunity to work on building more human relationships as opposed to work relationships where people are just seen as resources, not as individual contributors.
Interesting. What I absolutely love is maybe you kind of stereotypically can picture a lot of the women in the workplace with their kids. It's a dual role that you almost maybe are socialized to accept or expect. What I find interesting is on a call with some of the guys when, you know, they get interrupted by one of their kids, because men are so traditionally successfully separated these worlds. The fact that that the burden often lies on the women is something, a completely different discussion. But all of a sudden you're starting to see kids, these guys who might have quite a macho image, you know, playing a very, very different role. It is 8:40. We do have to leave it there. Fascinating, fascinating conversation. Ian Bassarabi, the future of work. Very, very interesting indeed. Thank you for your wisdom.